All right, Jesus Christ, a plan for love, a love beyond measure. And this is our redemption story. So if you have got the dark blue plastic egg, can you come on up? Who's got the blue plastic egg? That's light purple. That's you. Beautiful.
I would call that light blue.
That is definitely not light blue. That is dark blue.
Okay.
When you see the light blue, you'll know. What have you got in your egg?
I have got a donkey.
A donkey. Can we hold up the donkey? All right. This little donkey.
Let me get the telescope out.
Sorry, yeah, he's only tiny. Because they go in the egg.
Silhouette.
Here we go. Here's our little donkey. All right, we can go to the first slide. So, who remembers what the donkey symbolized from Palm Sunday?
Being humble.
Yes. Anything else?
Transportation.
It is transportation. Jesus used it. He came in to Jerusalem on the donkey.
And it was the baby one.
It was the colt, yes. The baby donkey, the colt, that had never, ever been ridden before. And it was all about Jesus coming in humility. And it was not about him riding in on the big stallion of a horse as a king and saying, I'm here to conquer through war, but I'm a humble king and I'm going to conquer with peace. And the donkey was also about peace. So Jesus, our king, came in humility and peace. Angus, I'm not going to get you to read the first one because it's a huge chunk, and we did actually read that last week.
Brilliant.
So if you missed it, go back to last week's little sermon and you'll hear it there. Who's the light pink?
Angus,
what is in your light pink egg? Sounds like money.
Gold.
Money.
Well, it's not gold, but it's like a bullshit. It's a little Indian man, maybe.
Close.
Caesar.
It is a Roman coin, and I believe that might be what they think Caesar looks like on there. So do you want to come put those up on our table here as well? We do have three silver coins in our little leg. And there was a plot to kill Jesus. Angus, I'll let you read that.
And one of the 12 followers went to talk to the leading priests. This was the follower named Judas Iscariot. He said, I will hand Jesus over to you. What will you pay me for doing this? The priests gave him 30 silver coins. After that, Judas waited for the best time to hand Jesus over to them.
So, I love looking into the meanings of things. I'm like, why do we call him Judas Iscariot? So in Hebrew, he is Judah Iscariot, I think, something like that. The Is, or Ish, is actually about being from a place. And the Cariot is a version of a place name where Judas or Judah came from. So it tells us where he originated from. We know which guy they're referring to. Thank you. Revolving to? Thanks. Referring to. So Judas thought it was a great idea to sell Jesus out. He was going to make it rich quick. And he was given this bag of silver coins. But he didn't get much for it, let me tell you. Because we learned just after our Easter story that in fact he went and bought himself this gorgeous piece of land. And he promptly fell over. And the Bible's really quite graphic. It says he fell over head first and his guts spilled out and he died.
That's unfortunate.
It is very unfortunate. So he didn't get much for selling him out. All right. The plot thickens. Someone is selling Jesus out to the people who haven't really liked him but can't fault him. I'm after the light purple egg. Who has the light purple egg? Amazing. What have you got in it?
Something.
Something?
Zed.
What?
It's like
a cup. A cup? Okay. Yep, Zed will come and collect it from you. We'll put it up the front. It is a little cup. So by this point, we've travelled through the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We're not quite sure when these things have taken place so far, but we know, thank you, we know that we're now coming into the Thursday. Angus.
Then he took a cup of wine, thanked the Lord for it, and gave it to them. He said, "Each one of you, drink some of it. This wine is my blood, which will be poured out to forgive the sins of many and begin a new agreement or covenant from God to his people."
So the cup at Passover, which is the meal that Jesus was sitting down to with his disciples, represented the blood of the lamb back when the Israelites left Egypt. It was the blood of the lamb that saved them from death. The spirit of death passed over them if they had the blood of the lamb on their lintels and doorframe. So here, Jesus is saying, "I'm the Lamb. I'm going to save you from death. This is the symbol of the new covenant." But they didn't understand that just yet.
Does not say God deafened their ears, or made them not be able to
understand. In one of the passages, yeah, it says God closed their ears, yeah. An orange egg. Who's got the orange
Which
egg?
Which one? There's two orange.
The light will go up.
Ooh, I think...
They're both
the dark one.
That's a light one.
Yeah, that's the light one. You've got the dark one, Zed. What is that?
Hands.
Hands.
Praying.
Ah, praying hands. All right, bring them up. So, after the Passover meal, the cedar, Jesus went to a garden. Is it up there, Angus?
Oh, yeah.
Jesus and his followers went to a place named Gethsemane. He said to them, "Sit here while I pray." But he told Peter, James, and John to come with him. He began to be very distressed and troubled, and he said to them, "My heart is so heavy with grief. I feel as if I am dying. Wait here and stay awake."
So they've had a busy Thursday. They've shared a meal together. They're going out in the evening and they've gone to this garden called Gethsemane. Now, I have there in the background image, it's a big stone that rolls around in circles and crushes, not grapes, but olives. That's an olive press. And I learned something really interesting about the name given to Gethsemane. Gethsemane is actually a transliteration. It's not an immediate translation from one language to another. It's gone through a few to get to the English Gethsemane, but in Hebrew, it's Gethsemane, and it means olive press, the place of pressing. Now, when olives are pressed in this press, they are pressed three times. It's immense weight, as you can imagine. That's a rather large stone rolling around on them. It is a huge, huge crushing. And in the first crushing, you get the purest oil extracted. That's where the virgin olive oil comes from. It's the first press. And that particular olive oil was reserved for anointing kings. The second press would give you the next lot of oil, and that oil was used for healing the sick. The third press would provide the olive oil for your daily table, for your daily life, and where the humble home would use olive oil. So Jesus has gone to this place of great crushing. And while he is there, he knew that he was going to die soon. He was afraid, but he submitted. He yielded to his Father. And it says here, you know, he said to them, "Wait here and stay awake. Come with me, stay awake." He chose his three most faithful friends, the ones he could depend on. And even they couldn't stay awake. They were so exhausted, they fell asleep too. While Jesus went through such crushing that he was sweating blood, that is how stressed he was about the situation. He went into that garden having been anointed as king. So not long before Lent finished, Jesus had been anointed with oil. I don't know if you remember the story where, I can't remember her name, but brings in her little bottle of oil. Might have been Mary, yeah?
Mary.
She brought in her bottle, and all the disciples said, "What are you doing? What are you wasting all that oil? That's worth a lifetime's worth of wages. What are you doing?" But she broke it open and she anointed Jesus with the oil. He had been anointed as a king. And here he is heading into a place where the first crushing is oil for kings. He became our healer. And he was crushed for our everyday salvation. Who's got the yellow egg? What's in that?
Chicken with green wings.
Rooster.
A chicken with green wings?
Rooster.
A rooster. Indeed, it is a rooster. Thanks, Angus.
Zed.
But he began to invoke a curse on himself and to swear, "I do not know this man of whom you speak." And immediately a rooster crowed a second time. And Peter remembered how Jesus had said to him, "Before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times." And he broke down and wept.
This is Jesus' best friend we're talking about here, Peter. His one most dependable person, the rock. And yet, in Jesus' hour of need, even he could not live up to the expectation. Jesus, however, is ever dependable. And he did not waver, not once, from the mission that he had, as horrible as he knew as it was going to be. The dark green one. It is a whip, indeed.
Then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him.
So overnight, from the garden, of course, Judas found the perfect time to hand Jesus over. And the authorities came, there was a bit of a tussle, Jesus heals a guy, and even in the midst of that, they take him away. He's had no sleep. He's been extremely stressed. He's taken to both Pilate and Herod, And he was judged by both of them to be innocent of all charges that were laid against him. However, it was custom in those days, at this particular feast time, that one prisoner would be set free. And so Herod assumed that everyone would want Jesus to be free. He says, I haven't found any fault with this guy. So, you know, I'll punish him. I'll scourge him, which means to be flogged. And then I'll just let him go. Like, he's done nothing. You want him punished, I'll punish him. That's fine, but let's let him go. No. We want Barabbas. Interesting thing to note. Barabbas. Bar-Abbas. Bar, meaning the son of. And Abba, meaning the father. The Son of God the Father was exchanged for Barabbas, son of the Father. How significant. I'm going to get Richard to go to the next slide. There is something for us to watch. It's about 3.5 minutes long. And I'm going to give you a few moments. If you are someone like me who's a little bit emotional all the time, I'll give you a few moments to collect yourselves afterwards, and we do have tissues down the front if you require.
We see the story of Jesus going to the cross, and everything seems to kind of be hand in hand, and then there's this one character that seems to interrupt the narrative. His name's Barabbas. We don't even know much about him except that he's a murderer, a leader of an insurrection, a rebel. And why he's even mentioned, sometimes I'm not so sure. It's like, what? This is about Jesus going to the cross. So in this moment, Pilate thinks, I hold the destinies of these two men in my hand. I know the Jews have a tradition that on a holy day, I will release one of the prisoners on death row. Pilate stands on this audacious stage, who now presents Jesus, Son of the Living God, versus Barabbas, the thug and rebel. He says, all right, who do you want? This is blasphemy. This has gone too far. There's no comparison. This is a rightful prisoner, a man who should be on death row. He's a rebel against Rome. He leads a rebellion. He murders people. He's a bad man. He's a thug. He's a crook. He deserves the chains, and he deserves the crucifixion. Jesus, what has he done but heal, restore, deliver, set free, open blind eyes, open deaf ears, heal the lame and the leper? What has Jesus done? Who do you want? Who do you want, Barabbas? Yeah, give us Barabbas. Because they give us Barabbas, the Roman soldiers come up and they put the key in and they unlock Barabbas from his chains and shackles, and he walks down the platform, welcomed by all of his thug friends. Yeah, the people love me. Yeah, that's right. I don't know who this Jesus guy is, but all I know is my people love me. There seems to be no conscience of Barabbas. There's no record of him turning to Jesus and said, I owe you everything now, for you have set me free. No, I don't see any of that in Barabbas. God knew that. Jesus stood there, silent, for he knew the will of the Father. He said, it's fine, Father. Let him have Barabbas. For Jesus knew that the Father would have to treat Jesus like Barabbas so he could treat Barabbas like Jesus. Barabbas thought it was the people that set him free. No. It was the love.
When I look at the story acknowledge the freaking gift, but I love your ass. And while we were still sinners, Christ died for us.
So we come to our light orange egg. What is that?
It's a crown of thorns.
It is a crown of thorns. How many of you have stood on some prickles?
What was that?
How many have stood on prickles? Little bindi. Yeah, they're not pleasant, are they? Have you ever stood on a three-cornered jack?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not pleasant either. A little more not pleasant than the bindi birds. We're not talking that kind of prickle or that kind of thorn. How many people have pricked their finger on a rosebush thorn? Yeah, also not pleasant. But that's still not the thorn we're talking about. These thorns were a particular plant grown in the area. And they say that in order to weave a crown, the people who wove it could not possibly have not had their hands cut to shreds. Yet Jesus didn't waver when they put it on his head. The light green egg.
The cross?
The cross. And look closer.
Nail?
They are nails. Nails in the shape of a cross.
So they took Jesus and he went out, bearing his own cross to the place called the place of a skull, which in Aramaic is called Golgotha. There they crucified him, and with him two others, one either side, and Jesus between them.
So these huge nails were placed in Jesus' wrists and ankles to maximize pain. And Jesus took this pain because he loves us. He was willing to be punished and willing to yield so that we didn't have to bear the pain or to bear the punishment. At this point, it was about midday on the Friday, and darkness descended over all the land, even though the sun was still high. And that darkness remained for 3 long hours. At 3 p.m., the veil tore, and Jesus took his last breath. We call that day Good Friday. And it's only good because we can reflect and say, it was good. But at the time, I don't think that Jesus' mother or disciples or friends would have called it a good day. How often do we think that when we are through our roughest trials? That, gee, this is good. I'm suffering. Sometimes we need to wait for God to show us what it's all really about. The dark purple egg
spear.
It is a spear. So more prophecy was fulfilled.
So the soldiers came and broke the legs of the first and of the other who had been crucified with him. But when they came to Jesus and saw that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. But one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and at once there came out blood and water.
It was prophesied that not a bone would be broken on the Saviour, the Messiah, and it was not. It was also said, they will look on him who is pierced. Indeed, Jesus was pierced after he had died. Scientifically speaking, we know that he was already dead because blood and water came out. But Jesus himself said, the communion cup is his blood poured out. And so it was. The light blue egg. What's in there, Colin? You reckon? Nothing?
Oh, hang on.
A piece of cloth. A little white linen cloth.
Thanks, Richard.
When it was evening, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who also was a disciple of Jesus. He went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus, and Pilate ordered it to be given to him. And Joseph took the body and wrapped it in a clean linen shroud and laid it in his own new tomb, which he had cut in the rock. And he rolled a great stone to the entrance of the tomb and went away.
So Jesus wasn't just dumped or left to be claimed as criminals might have been. He was loved and treated with care, even in his death, by his disciples. The dark pink egg.
It's a rock.
It is a rock.
When it was evening, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who was also a disciple of Jesus, and this is the same thing I just read.
It is indeed. So, he did wrap him in linen, as the first part says, and in the second part there, yes, he put a stone in front of the tomb. Now, these tombs, as it said, he had carved for himself. They were specifically carved, including the stone that would have been placed in the hole, in the entrance to the tomb. It would not have been a misaligned or misfitting stone, but a perfectly carved one to fit. And in fact, I read something just recently to say they also have found evidence to say that they had a technique of sealing the stone into the tomb also. And yet they still placed guards because they knew of Jesus' popularity. And that stone was no issue for the angel that came. The white thing. There is nothing in it, indeed. Just as the tomb remains empty.
But the angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you seek Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, for he is risen." And he said, "Come see the place where he lay."
The tomb was empty, of course, except for the linen shroud that had been wrapped around him. And I don't... Yes, you can see it. It was folded. The Bible tells us in a number of passages that they found, when the ladies entered the tomb, they saw his shroud folded and left. The tomb is empty. Jesus is risen. So today, as we come to communion, I hope that you have found something fresh to celebrate in the risen life of Jesus. Because while his last week on earth was not a particularly easy one, while his death was a horrible one, he is alive. He defeated it. He defeated death, not for the fun of going through the crucifixion. He defeated death so that we can have life when we believe in him. He defeated death so that we can have life, and life to the fullest. That we don't need to experience any of those things that he did, but receive him into our own lives as king. Jesus yielded to his Father's will. He suffered horrendous pain, yes, but even death could not hold him down. So, hallelujah,
yeah.
Jesus Christ is risen.
Yep.
Blessed be the King. Let's eat and drink in celebratory remembrance. You have your cup and bread, cracker, on your table. Feel free to share it with one another at the table and take it together.